This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me, gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
All right, welcome to it. It is Thursday, the 27th of April, 2017. Thank you for joining the conversation here on the Steve Gruber Show. I want to say thank you to the people at Northville Lumber, the number one dealer of Trex products, Trex decking and railing. They sell more than anybody in the Midwest. To find out more, log on to northvillelumber.com. Tell them Steve sent you, northvillelumber.com. Get that maintenance-free deck started today. Looking at the economy, how is the new tax plan put forth by Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin going to affect you, the average American, if it went through? A lot of things here. It would reduce the number of tax brackets from 7 to just 3, 10, 25, and 35%. The top rate dropping to 35% from 39.6. But the administration has not said which income ranges would apply to those brackets. You know, it's interesting. If you go back through the history of tax cuts, when John Kennedy made his big proposal for a tax cut in 1963 that was ultimately ratified the following year and signed by Lyndon Johnson after he was killed in office, Jack Kennedy, he took the top income bracket from 90%. Can you imagine 90% was the top income bracket in 1963, down to 70%. Ronald Reagan dropped it from 70 to 50, and then down lower in a second move. And, you know, these are all big. And today we're talking about reducing it from 39.6 down to 35, but at one point it was 90%. Unbelievable, right? In the top tax bracket. Anyhow, let's see here. According to the Tax Policy Center, the top 1% of households would save more in overall taxes after tax income. Of course they would. They have more in the game. Low and middle class Americans would see gains as well. The standard deduction currently at $63.50 for single people and $12.7 for married couples would double. The standard deduction would double. That would save every moderate income family in America money. Many more low to moderate income families would pay no taxes at all, but all other deductions except for mortgage interest and charitable contributions eliminated, including state and local taxes and medical expenses eliminated. So about this is part of this I'm pulling from USA Today. About 70% of Americans, mostly low to moderate income, currently take the standard deduction and would benefit. Many of the remaining 30% would itemize. Largely high-income households, which would likely switch to a standard reduction, leaving only about 5% itemizing. Some wealthy Americans could end up paying higher taxes, though most would save. Scrapping their state and local provision would have the biggest impact and would largely hurt Americans in blue or Democratic states on the coast that pay higher state and local tax rates already, because they're already paying higher rates, and they like that anyway, so let them do that. They're happy with that. The estate tax would be gone. The 40% tax currently applies to a $5.5 million inheritance for individuals and $11 million for married couples. It's interesting. You know, and here's where people don't understand the math of all this. I think the inheritance tax is a horrible thing. I've been through it twice with my parents passing away. And I can tell you that the thresholds were much lower when my father died a dozen years ago. And the government got a share as big as everybody else. I mean, they just gobbled up piles of money. I mean, you pay taxes when the dollar is earned. You pay taxes when you spend the dollar. You pay taxes when you invest the dollar. And then when you die, they want to come gobble up even more. It's extremely hard on farmers and others that want to pass on legacy businesses to their families, of course, because instead of being able to pass on that business, the business has to be liquidated, or the land that powers a farm has to be liquidated to pay the tax bill. I find it absolutely absurd. Of course, the tax plan wasn't even on the table before people started, you know, yelling and screaming about it, and they'll try to paint this as a tax break for the rich, including Donald Trump. He'll save all of this money. Well, yeah, I suppose that's true. But when I look at it, I know that it saves me money. And when I see the standard deduction for married couples at $25,000, give or take, that saves a lot of people money. And more people than ever will pay no taxes at all. But it doesn't matter what Donald Trump does as president. He's opposed at every turn by the Democrats, by the angry members of the media, often by members of his own party. Although it's pretty clear he's not really, obviously not a dye-in-the-wool Republican by any stretch of the imagination. 98 days today, and he continues to battle. He continues to do his best to achieve his agenda. But it doesn't really matter what he puts up. President Trump, the focus of an angry media, angrier contempt from others. And he continues to battle. And we'll keep an eye on this. They think, they being Mnuchin, think that maybe this bill can make it the way, its way through the United States Congress by mid to late August. These things take time, but it has been unveiled. Meanwhile, the Obamacare repeal plan has life again. It's alive again and possibly going to return. It's possibly going to return. And another campaign promise also taking shape now, this being the 98th day of the president's tenure in the White House. But President Trump and the leaders of Mexico and Canada have agreed now to renegotiate the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA. That's right. Remember how people said that would never happen and he couldn't do that? Well, he got us out of TPP. There's a big promise. And renegotiate NAFTA, which he said was a terrible deal for everybody. Well, guess what? The Canadians and the Mexicans now coming to the table after Donald Trump said, you know what, we don't have to renegotiate it. We could just leave. The United States can just leave this deal and you guys can figure it out for yourselves. Well, that obviously put some fear into our friends to the north and south. And so President Peña Nieto of Mexico and Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau have all come to the table and said, well, it's time to put this thing together. Trump repeatedly railed against the two-decade-old trade agreement, obviously, on the campaign trail. He called it a disaster over and over again. A lot of folks said that it would never happen. He would never renegotiate NAFTA. But once again, don't underestimate this president who continues to push things through. He got us out of TPP. He's renegotiating NAFTA. He is looking out for average Americans. At least that is his statement. Now, coming up here on the program, Clark Hodges will be here, a financial strategist. We're going to talk about those tax cuts. We're going to talk about renegotiating NAFTA. We're going to talk about the Dow at 21,000 and soaring, and the fact that it's the best seller's market maybe ever. If you have real estate to sell, it's time. We'll take a couple of phone calls right after the break as well. We'll get to Joe and Owasso and others. You're listening to The Steve Gruber Show.
Keeping you in touch with Michigan and the world.
Maybe I should call it the free speech hotline. Seems like free speech is in danger every day. Joe checking in on Owasso. Joe, what's on your mind?
Well, the thing that's interesting is this president is finally trying to incentivize entrepreneurship. For the last 8 years, you saw what happened. Bad unemployment. Why? Because he taxed and he abused the small business, which people did not understand. It creates 65 to 70% of the job market in this country. And so everybody was questioning, well, why is there such unemployment? Well, when there's no incentive to start a small business, you're not going to have these jobs. All I can say is I think it's hilarious to compare Donald Trump to the man who's running against Le Pen. I think his name's Macron,
yeah.
France, because he's actually got on the bill that if he gets in, anybody that makes 1 million euros or more is going to be taxed at 100%.
Yeah, which creates nothing but socialism. Joe, thank you for checking in. You see, If the state takes more than half at any given point, at some point the House gets all the cards. My next guest, Clark Hodges, checking in, a financial strategist. Clark, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing today?
Doing good. And yeah, I see that one of the provisions of the Trump proposal is to eliminate the estate tax altogether. And, of course, people are going crazy. Well, those rich people are going to keep all of their money. Well, if I earn whatever I earn in my life, shouldn't I be entitled to give it to my children if that's what I'm inclined to do, or give it to charity or do whatever it is I intend to do? Why should it be dictated to the government? Because I pay taxes when I earn it. I pay taxes when I spend it. I pay taxes when I invest it. Why should I pay taxes when I'm done with it?
Oh, I agree 100%. You should look at it like a triple taxation, really, because you get income, you pay income tax on it when you make it. Most people that have that kind of money have invested it, and you pay capital gains tax when you invest it and make a profit. And then when you pass away, 40% of it goes to the government. I don't understand how that got away, how we got away with that at all. Now, there is the provision that each estate worth up to $5 million won't be subject to the estate tax. But I think going forward, you know, the death tax is a smart move. And, you know, people that complain about it don't understand the full scope of it, because a lot of small businesses are negatively affected by this, because when a founder of a farm or a small business passes away, a lot of times the kids are forced to sell the business.
That's right.
Just to pay the tax.
That's what I just told the folks.
That's the criminal part here. I mean, that founder of that business or that farmer who started that thing 40 years ago, he never intended to build it up and have his kids sell it when he passed away. He intended for his kids to have a place to work primarily. Now, some kids don't work in the family business, but I'm in a family business and I understand how that works. My father founded our firm, you know, with the hopes that his kids, if they wanted to, would have a place to work for their career. And I see that full scope. My father passed away 2 years ago. So,
yeah, see, I went through that 10 years ago, or a little bit more now. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, a lot of people lose everything to taxes when there's this exchange, if you will. Farms get lost because instead of having a legacy farm that continues, the kids are forced to sell the land to pay the tax bill. And if there's no land to farm, well, pretty much there's no farm. And what happens?
Right.
The big farms, the industrialized farms that the people on the left complain about, become bigger because right. The people, the rich people, you know, they're taking the money from they don't even understand the results of their own actions. That's what concerns me. But as you look at this overall plan, dropping taxes to 15% and so forth, Clark, do you see some positives here? Do you see some concerns? What do you see as a big picture?
Well, I fall in the camp where I'm for less taxes, generally speaking. So I see a lot of positives. I think the main things that I see that I really, really like is the 15% proposal for corporate tax. Corporate taxes are really, really high. And if the corporate tax were to come down to 15% or even 20% for that matter, you're really going to have a situation where it's going to benefit domestic companies, smaller businesses, smaller privately held businesses, and smaller publicly traded companies. It'll be a really, really good thing for earnings. So you'll see tremendous growth in earnings per share projections and earnings for companies. And that's great for the stock market, because primarily you could say that most stock prices move in conjunction with the earnings power of the corporation. So I really do think that's a big, big deal. And that's probably one of the biggest things in there. And capital gains tax coming down is also going to be a benefit for investors. So those two things right there, I think, are real positives in my mind, because they're going to help the stock market. And that's what I do every day.
Right. And that's going to help. If there's certainty that businesses are going to invest. And another thing that's probably going to help the stock market, one of the plans, to repatriate a couple trillion dollars or more at a flat fee that'll be competitive, we are told. We don't know what that fee is. Mnuchin didn't have an exact number yet, but he said it would be competitive on the world stage. That would bring a tremendous amount of money back into the United States.
Oh, well, the stats are there's $1.6, almost $2 trillion overseas. So you could literally jumpstart this economy with 1 or 2% more growth just by doing that one thing. And that's going to create so many jobs and such a windfall for the economy, for consumers, for retail, for restaurants, for movies. You can't even imagine what that would do. And so I think that's a huge, huge deal.
Yeah, I would say that that could be the kind of thing that would really get the economy going. And then one last thing I just saw that came out late yesterday. We've been talking about it this morning. Donald Trump has gotten both the Canadian prime minister and the Mexican president to agree to renegotiate NAFTA and get a better deal, as he promised. A lot of people said that would never happen. Well, guess what?
Right.
It's happening.
I agree. That's the thing. That's the beauty of a guy who's a negotiator, who's a businessman. He's used to getting things done. And this guy, you know, probably when we're all sleeping, decided to pick up the phone and say, hey, let's renegotiate this thing. And he talked them into it. And so when you go back to the tax situation, let's say his proposal for 15% tax on corporations is not achieved and it's 20%. Well, that's still a huge benefit to the whole country.
Sure is.
And one other point I'd like to make
real
about
quick,
it,
you got about 5 seconds.
The middle class will benefit from this tremendously. So you can't argue that this hurts the middle class, because the first $24,000 that a married couple earns, is tax free.
Thank you, Clark Hodges.
Taking a closer look at the stories that affect you most with a big dose of common sense.
All right, it is Thursday here on the program. And after these revelations of a pair of Michigan doctors being arrested for female genital mutilation involving 2 7-year-old girls from Minnesota, I reached out to some different members of Congress. The one that got right back to me and said this is an important concern, Congressman Jack Bergman, the freshman representative from Michigan's 1st Congressional District, joining me now. Congressman, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Great to be with you.
Glad to have you here. You were the first one to return in my message. We spoke a little bit. Obviously, this is a big concern. If we have, I mean, these are violent acts being performed on children and little girls. And I don't care if it's religious in nature, cultural in nature. I don't care where these people come from. I don't care if they're here legally, illegally. None of those factors matter. When it comes to brutalizing these children, I think that there should be strong laws against it, stronger than we currently have. And I'm wondering if there's any appetite in Congress to do the same.
Well, you know, Steve, number one, when you called the other day, thank you for the dialogue, because it gave me a chance to really kind of dig into this. And, the more I look at it, this is really, there's so many levels here, but this is really an international women's rights issue. I mean, it really is. I mean, if you're a women's rights group, no matter what your political ideology is, I believe this ought to be right on the top of your list. Because the UN classified this, this female genital mutilation, we kind of say FGM to kind of sanitize it. I don't think we should use an acronym. This is just flat violence against women.
Agreed.
You know, a couple of years ago, UNICEF said there are at least 200 million females that have undergone some form of this procedure.
Yeah, I totally agree. 200 million women have been brutalized by this over the last several years. It's not just a women's rights issue. It's a human rights issue, Congressman. It is something of a grave concern, not only to the 200 million around the world, but they say 500,000 American girls and women have been brutalized by this practice. I think the number is probably far higher because it's hidden in the shadows. We don't know who's involved, but it really doesn't matter about politics or religion or whether it's cultural. It doesn't matter to me. And in this particular case, it doesn't matter to me if these little girls are here legally, illegally. It doesn't matter. It has to stop.
Well, I agree. And the United States criminalized female genital mutilation in 1996. The punishment is imprisonment up to 5 years, deportation if you're a non-citizen. In 2013, the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, had a provision in there that made it illegal to knowingly transport a girl outside the United States for purposes of getting this procedure performed. And, that issue, that provision made intent an element of the crime, and intent is difficult to prove. At the state level, Michigan is one of 26 states that do not have provisions that specifically prohibit this procedure, the female genital mutilation procedure. And you know, based on my research, you know, I'm going to reach out to my state. I think we can bolster the federal statute by Michigan stepping up and writing its own, because now you have it on two levels where this can be prosecuted.
Well, I agree with you on that. And I think that we're on the line here with Congressman Jack Bergman, talking about female genital mutilation brought to the forefront again, this time by the high-profile arrest of two doctors here in Michigan. So, and I agree with you, Congressman, but I would say we should go further. First of all, I think the doctors should be held accountable, which in this case they are. I think that the penalties should be on par with first-degree criminal sexual conduct. I just don't think that there's any way to avoid that. This is talking to victims that have been on the program here, talking to people that have been traumatized, the women that have gone through this, ones that are brave enough to speak out, have been living a life of disfigurement from the brutal attack to begin with, and then the mental trauma, the psychological problems that go with it. But I think we should look beyond it to the parents. You're talking about facilitation and doing holiday cutting when they take the kids out of the country to have this performed somewhere else in some dank place. But the parents should be looked at very closely as to whether or not they've committed crimes concerning child endangerment and the welfare of the children. And then furthermore, For the ones that stem from religious practice, which much of it does, I think that those that are in the clergy that are encouraging this to happen, we might want to take a look at what's happening there. We're not criminalizing a religion, but we are criminalizing an activity that traumatizes little girls. Is that fair?
Well, it is fair, and I think your idea about the designation as a sexually deviant or sexually deviant act against children. When someone is convicted of that, now that puts them in an entirely different category.
Well, and it should, because what we're doing here, this is, I don't know, it's unthinkable to me, because what I think about is the horror to those little girls, and it transcends politics, it transcends religion, it transcends all other planes, to the point of the horror that a 7 or 8 or 9 year old girl goes through, having, and in this particular case of these 7 year olds brought here from Minnesota, told by their mothers a special adventure for the girls. The next thing you know, they're being dragged into a strange room, being held down with strangers by people that are supposed to care for them and look out for them. The mental damage, the anguish, the scars emotionally, to me it's sickening.
Well, and we need, you know, as part of any, you know, education program, that, I mean, strategies for prevention, there needs to be education in the community at large and outreach to make sure that, you know, we hear the saying, if you see something, say something. This is the kind of situation where everyone needs to step up if they sense either one, it's happening, or not, two, they know of someone who is actually performing this or has. They need to step up.
Right, because the problem that we have here, General, is that, you know, that a lot of this happens in the shadows. There's a tremendous amount of secrecy. That's why when the report is that there's 500,000 cases in the United States, but you talk to people that know, you talk to victims, as we have on the program this past few days, you find out that there's a lot more people likely to have been subjected to this brutalization that never do come forward, and that you never hear from. So I guess my question to you is, okay, you're doing your research, you're thinking about reaching out to the Michigan people to see if you can strengthen laws here at the state level as well. What is your next step?
Well, I think, again, the next step for me is to, because the federal law exists, it's now, you need to kind of double down, which is why Michigan needs to have a law. So my next step will be to be in direct contact with my reps. I think that's the starting point of any Michigan resident. You start with who represents you. In that case, it's my senator, Tom Casperson, and my representative up in the 110th, Scott Deanda. So this is going to be a collaborative effort that we put some fire underneath and say, let's get Michigan in the game here and strengthen the laws. And then that way I can begin to work with them at a federal level just to make sure things begin to match up. But bring awareness and bring criminal action very defined
yeah,
for this type of a activity.
And let Michigan set the standard. Congressman, I think you're right on the money on this one. Let Michigan set the standard. The problem was brought to light here. Let us address it here, and let us move forward from here. Congressman, I greatly appreciate you taking the time today. I know you're very busy, as it's a busy time in Washington, but this is an important issue, and I appreciate you sharing.
Well, you know, thanks, Steve, and thank you for reaching out. I always look forward to hearing what you have to say because you think about things first.
Thank you, sir. Jack Bergman, everybody, congressman from Michigan's 1st Congressional District. We'll take a quick break and be right back right here on The Steve Gruber Show.
Genuine Michigan common sense on display every day.
All right, and welcome to it on a Thursday. It was supposed to rain today, which is like when it rains, it's a happy day for a guy who owns movie theaters and for most people wanting to go to movie theaters and sell popcorn and such. I don't see it raining now, which I apologize for, but I'll bring my next guest in anywhere. Hey, there he is, everybody. It's Ron Van Timmerman. And Ron, welcome back to the program.
Good morning, Steve. It's cloudy and kind of funky, though. I think you could justify going to the movies.
I can make a case for it just about any day if you want to know the truth. I like going to the movies. I did go this week.
Oh, really?
I did.
Me too. What did you see?
I saw, it didn't make the top five, but it did make the top ten. I saw Gifted.
Oh, I loved that movie.
I thought it was very, very good.
Now, did you take your wife? Was it a good date night movie?
It was terrific date night. Of course I took her. I'm not leaving. I'm not going to the theater without her, first of all, because I wouldn't want to, and second of all, she wouldn't let me. You know, she got that going for me. Yeah. We both liked it.
The little girl was outstanding.
Really good. That child, I mean, and I'm thinking that the one downside to it all, I'm thinking, you know, child actors and actresses, you know, they have a, you know, track record that's a little spotty, but she was terrific.
She was terrific, and I hope to see more of her. And she was funny, I laughed, I cried, it became part of me.
Well, there you go. And so I would recommend Gifted as a, you know, it's a good safe movie for most people. You know, my child, 12, could certainly see it, no problem.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I saw Born in China, which another one for the whole family, the rare G-rated movie. Of course, pretty pictures from China of panda bears and golden monkeys and snow leopards.
So a lot of this.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, that sort of stuff. Whoa. I got it.
Wow. This weekend, the best of the new movies is an interesting movie called The Circle, tackling that whole issue of privacy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Tom Hanks plays sort of a Jobs, Zuckerberg, Dorsey kind of guy running this high-tech company, and his mantra is, knowing is good, knowing everything is better. what could go wrong with that, Steve?
Nothing at all. I do notice that in that movie there is one of my favorite actors of all time who departed the screen in February for the last time. Bill Paxton is in this movie.
Yeah, and it is his final role, and I'm looking forward to seeing this movie for the cast. Tom Hanks, also Emma Watson, John Boyega, getting good reviews this morning. Only a few out there, but a solid one reviewer has a blame for somebody for in this movie and the loss of our privacy, and he's blaming us. We've been giving all these people this information. It's our fault.
Well, there's a lot of truth to that. We do give it away freely because it's more convenient to do so. Now, is there a trap? Of course there's a trap, but privacy? I wonder if the movie screen's looking at me the same as my Samsung TV, but we'll talk about that another time for my conspiracy theories. All right, good.
If you want to have some fun this weekend at the movies, check out How to Be a Latin Lover. Yeah, Raquel Welch is in this.
Who? Really?
Years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
Selma Hayek, Kristen Bell, and Rob Lowe in this as well, Michael Cera, Rob Corddry, and Eugenio Derbez, who's a big star in Mexico and is kind of the Mr. Bean of this movie.
Yeah.
It just looks like silly fun.
Yeah, crude humor, sexual references, I find that hard to believe, and some brief nudity.
And men in thongs, you've been warned.
Why'd you have to go there? It's early. Good Lord. I mean, people having breakfast. All right.
Yeah. Also, one of the biggest movies in worldwide release this weekend is called Bahubali 2. It's from India, believe it or not. an IMAX version of Bahubali 2, easy for me to say, is at the IMAX in Lansing. That's how big this movie is going to be. And so if you're into Indian movies, Bahubali 2 worth checking out this weekend.
Just tell me who the director is and who the stars are. Go ahead. I dare you.
No way I can pronounce any of these names.
Fair enough. What else you got?
Well, some also rans this weekend, Colossal, with Anne Hathaway and Jason Sudeikis, weird-looking sort of action comedy, few theaters picking up Slight, which is a good kid gone bad with a street magic theme to it. That's rated R. And Their Finest, which really looks good about people that made the propaganda movies during World War II, especially in the U.K. when the Blitzkrieg started. And it was a way of building morale, using movies as art and power to change people's minds about the war. So Their Finest looks good this weekend, too.
Fascinating. All right. Well, Ron, it looks like a pretty good weekend to go to the movies, because I think there is going to be some rain about, so a good chance to get in and get some hot popcorn and a hot movie. Is that all? You got anything special for me?
1 week from today, be the first to see Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Oh, yes.
Kicking off the summer blockbuster season. Tickets on sale now. Do get those in advance, especially for the IMAX at CelebrationCinema.com. That's going to be a hot ticket next weekend.
Well, the ladies do like Chris Pratt, do they not?
Oh, I like Chris Pratt. Come on. Well, I got a man crush.
Well, yeah, he's pretty cool dude, actually. And don't forget, you can get your tickets online. Did you say that?
I did say that.
Yeah, all right. I'm just making sure. I want to make sure we say it twice. Ron Van Timmeren, where will we find you?
With the movie, Steve.
There you go, Ron, everybody, here on Thursdays to tell you what's coming up for your video entertainment at the movies for the big screen. For as long as that's around, because Netflix is eating us alive. Us being Hollywood, getting eaten every day by Netflix. You know, we don't watch things the way we used to. You know, binge watching the whole thing happens all the time now. In fact, I don't know that I would see much television except that, you know, you get an hour or two here or there. I mean, I can't predict where I'm going to be on a Thursday night or a Saturday night or wherever. You know, you've got kids' events and other things, and you're busy and a lot of things and running around. Who knows where you're going to be, right? Well, that's the way that works. And so binge watching, it's what I do. It's probably what a lot of you do as well. It is 51 after. I want to say thank you to all the partners that make this program possible. And I want to encourage you to support the advertisers you hear on this program every day, because they make it possible. Just about ready to mark our 5-year anniversary, and we couldn't do it without you, the listener, or without our advertising friends like those at Northville Lumber. They sell more Trex decking and railing than anyone in the Midwest. Can you believe that? Anyone in the Midwest. It's maintenance-free. It's Trex decking materials. You're going to love it. To find out more, log on to NorthvilleLumber.com. NorthvilleLumber.com. That's TREX Trex at NorthvilleLumber.com. Back in a moment on the Steve Gruber Show.